Welcome to Minority Corner
with Aneke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues,
only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
This week on Minority Corner,
what are we cooking in this kitchen?
Ooh, episode 151, my boo.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, we're clear. And no signs of slowing down because, Aneke, we have some things to talk about.
Yes,
there
we do.
Is a memo that is seeking out to erase some of our fellow Americans.
Fuck
that mess. There will be no trans erasure on our watch.
No.
Because we're going to talk about this memo, and I've got some action steps of things that we can actively do to help resist this bullshit.
Yes, and I'm going to tag team it up and talk about, you know, what POCs that are gender nonconforming and transgender, to what, how to support those communities and how to, you know, really emphasize and lift ourselves up, and a book list.
Ooh, yes. I love you always serving it with that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Also, your girl, Megyn Kelly. I won't do that to you. Megyn Kelly.
She is not my girl. Thank you very much.
I was like, oh, she's not even going to giggle at that one. Megyn Kelly thinks blackface is all right, so I want to have a conversation about it. Is it? Is it not? I just don't know. For Halloween, when is it appropriate? When is blackface appropriate?
Let's Here's discuss. A hint. Never.
Well, we'll find out. We'll have to have an equal discussion about it.
End of story. We're going to discuss
only in the intro.
Never.
We have
You know, end of case, end of podcast.
Well, Mike has already been dropped and burnt and thrown out the window. Also,
you have a strange obsession with docudramas.
I do. I have some documentaries and docudramas I've been taking with my life.
I want to hear about this.
It's my new addiction. So is it healthy? Is it okay? I don't know.
I don't know either.
And I want to get your opinions about Halloween.
Yeah, am I into it? Am I not? What's going on?
What is going on with you? People need to know. Well, let's get into it.
Let's go. Hey, James.
What up? Ooh, we're getting ready for Halloween.
You know, Halloween is like real interesting because it's like, I feel like it's cyclical. I don't know if you feel like you've had it this way, but like when I was a kid, I was into it. When I was a teenager, I didn't give two shits about it.
Okay.
When I was in my 20s, I gave all the shits about it.
Yeah.
And now that I'm in my 30s, I don't care anymore.
Mm. Do you think it's also because you're in your 30s and you're with child?
No, I didn't care the previous five couple of years either.
Pregnancy
has nothing to do with this.
As someone who's early into their 30s, I think I can corroborate on this. Is that the right word? Corroborate?
Yeah, I think
cosign?
So. Yeah.
I can do both of those big C's.
Okay.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to CC that.
All right.
Attention
copy.
All. Yeah. Attention all. Yeah, I guess I press this like, it's be like, no, Aneke. But I've actually done the whole entire thing. Because, when in my 20s, especially my late 20s, when I got off the cruise ship, I was so into as like, because that's what I came from, the gay world where we also make all of our Halloween costumes as slutty as possible too. So I've been a slutty superhero. I've been a slutty superboy. I've been a slut. Just a slutty slut slut.
And sure, like, I guess, both. Double it. Double the fun.
A slutty slut.
Yeah.
And I guess at first, since I've been in my 30s, I've been mostly here in New York and I was a slutty Boy Scout. But you know what? I went to a party for the weekend, but the day of Halloween, I just, nothing happened. And this year, I'm going to a political event.
Okay, well,
good. With the Manhattan Young Democrats.
Cool.
But there's a costume contest. I don't feel like dressing up. I'm like, I don't have time or the energy or the effort. So I guess you're right.
You know, it's interesting. It's really weird. I don't understand. Some people are into it, though. It's not like, I wasn't trying to say that it's like an across the board thing. It's kind of my weird thing. Like, but some people are, like, hella into it.
But I feel like you'll probably get back into it in a few years, is my hunch.
Yeah,
a hunch.
Like, with a little baby that's
with
cute.
With a little kid running around. Because you get to do family, you get to do cute, I'm a big fan of family costumes.
I'm not.
Really? Oh, yeah. I love a good family costume.
I'm, like, such a drag.
You're like, go do your own thing, baby.
Yeah, like, I'm kind
make
of
your
all
own costume.
No, I'm, like, all about dressing baby up, making baby look cute, and then I just put a coat on. Leave me alone.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know, Maybe it's, I just don't feel like dressing up anymore. Maybe I dressed up so much in my 20s during like theme parties and stuff that
you you're probably exhausted because your costumes were very
elaborate.
They're very elaborate. And you do an every other year thing, if my memory calls me right. Mm-hmm. Every other year you do like something really big, and then the next year you'd be like, what's that guy with the sweater? Were you Ken Boone 1 year?
No.
Was that you?
No.
I swear it was like 1 year where you just wore a sweater, but it was so clever. It was really clever.
I think that was me. Because and I then think there was
you did wear a green leotard 1 year.
Yeah, I was, several years. I was a flower where I wore a green unitard and did the giant like petals around my head. And then I was a money bag where I wore the green unitard and I made like a giant money bag thing. Like I was into it. Now I just don't give a shit. And well, it sucks because I know so many people love it.
Yeah, well, hey, you can love what you can love.
It's
you
true.
Can love what you want to love.
Yeah. Oh,
and living in
that gay. Yeah, I'll take that. Speaking of costumes. Megyn Kelly.
Wait, before transition, just to point this little seed, you're going to have to come up with all the costumes. You're a baby because baby won't know what to wear for the first few years. So.
But I'm not doing it.
Get those creative juices flowing.
Not doing it. Megyn Kelly thinks that blackface is all right.
Well, let's look at this. Mm-hmm. I mean, is she wrong?
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I was trying to play devil's advocate for a second.
Right now?
Well, Aneke, we can't just agree on everything. I have to try to play. Someone's got to play the opposition.
That's the one you want to pick for the start of this.
Someone's got to play the opposition. Well, let's look at the facts, Aneke.
No facts.
I saw the clip. You know what really, ruffles my black ass feathers?
What's that?
You know what really gets my cockatoo?
Uh-huh.
You know what really, birds of feather flock together? We're doing an all bird theme today.
I don't like that.
Oh, because you don't like birds. I forgot. I'm sorry. I forgot. Okay. You know what really stomps my elephant feet?
What is it?
Switching the animal for you so you can like come back.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She did not give two flying fucks. Oh, wait. No, she gave all the fucks when there was a Black Santa. She was irate. She was getting the pitchforks. She was like, America's going to hell in a handbasket. And then cut to Megyn Kelly on her show with all white panelists. And props like the one, there's like the white, I'm assuming he's gay. I was trying to be like, no, it is racist. But the other ladies were just like, well, I don't know. And Jenna Bush was there, who I met her.
Oh my God. You know what? It's like, ask a black person instead of having a panel of white
people. Here's the thing. Go back and watch the clip. There is a brown, so I zoomed in on Megyn Kelly's face. And you can see some of the audience members in the background, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there is a woman of color in the background. And at first, Megyn Kelly's like, so they're doing blackface for Halloween. And the woman's like shaking her head, no, because that's the right response. And she's thinking Megyn Kelly's going to say that it's wrong.
Yeah.
And then Megyn Kelly doesn't say it's wrong. Her face stops.
Oh my God.
Look at that woman back.
Also, I want to give props not only to that lady first of all, why are you at that show, black lady? But anyways.
Sometimes they have paid audience members.
That's true.
Sometimes you're just in New York and you just get random tickets to things. It's either free or you're getting paid.
Oh, okay. Well, NBC, whose show she's on, who should have known better to hire her off of the Fox Network, they, on their nightly news, threw hella shade towards her. They had a segment where they were like, Megyn Kelly said this racist ass shit on this network. And then they brought up old ass clips of her talking about the Black Santa and Jesus, which I thought was real awesome. I was like, yeah, but also like maybe fire her. Maybe don't give her a platform, you know?
She's got a full hour all to herself with her crazy ideas. Well, they did it after like, I guess because it seemed like she was, because her and Trump don't get along. So they're like, oh, okay. So she's not quite a Trumper, but she still, you know, shines a light on like, just because you're not a Trumper doesn't mean that you're not a crazy conservative.
Stoking those ideas though. Stoke. At this point, at this point in this year of 2018, soon to be 2019, why are we still arguing about blackface? Like, why do you want to darken your skin to pretend you're another race so bad?
The one guy panelist who, like, he... like, it was mainly, like, Megyn Kelly was trying to trumpet this of, like, I should be able to do it. It's just Halloween. What other holiday can I possibly do it on? Because the black, there's a woman who dressed up as Diana Ross and, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, Luann de Lesseps from the Real Housewives of New York City.
And so it's like, but like, here's the thing, I guess for me, and this is something that you and I've always come back to, of when I see that I'm doing something that is hurting a group of people, why would I possibly continue to argue my right to do this? I see that you're being hurt by this. I see you don't like it. You're now upset and angry at me. Why would I want that venom in my life anyways? Like, why am I going to be like, I should be able to do this thing?
And then you fuck about the reason, honestly.
And you explain the history of like, oh, well, there's the history of this. And you're like, well, that's not my intention. And I'm like, well, but yeah, but the history. And so why would I be like, well, I'm going to do it. And you know what?
I know.
You have a, and the guy said this, he's like, you have a right to do this, but just beware that there's going to be flack. Like, if you're good, you can wear that, but know that you're going to get the flack. And
right.
So be able to like wear that as well.
Jesus. I just don't like, of all things to be upset about and constantly, people,
constantly.
Like every year. Every year, I feel like
why
you
can't
go
I wear
back
blackface?
Every year through all of our October episodes.
This
and
always comes up
about this.
Yes, you're right.
It
here
is
we
never
are again.
Ending.
Oh God!
Like, stop it.
So
I
bet you Megyn Kelly will probably like wear a blackface costume just to spite us all.
Oh my God! I hope she does, and I hope all the pictures are taken of her, and I hope she's shamed into oblivion because that's
finally
at least
tired.
One thing we know how to do is shame people in this day and age.
Oh, you know what? We are. I got my shame finger ready. I am ready.
With my
we
bell,
are.
My Game of Thrones
we
shame bell. Shame.
All we do. We got our stones and we're just, we are, you know what? Shaming is as old as, I would say, storytelling and prostitution.
Yeah, I
they probably.
Oh, yeah, it's
in
right
hand
outside
hand.
Of the door. Right out. You
they
probably tell about the prostitution so you
and
can
shame,
shame people.
Shame. They all just went linear, right? They
yes.
Just, the prostitution, the stories, and then the shame. It just
shame
boom,
came.
Boom, boom.
Mm-hmm.
And then
history.
Came the shame.
American history right there. We did it.
The oldest professions.
We saved it.
I on another note on the one end. So here's what happened in a week.
Okay.
So last week, and there's literally like 1 week within a time span. Last week, I got on my internet, on my interwebs.
Yes.
I got a little message.
Did you crank it up?
Yes,
you have
I
to
did.
Like pedal your bike to turn it on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of, I'm going to tangent real quick.
Uh-huh.
There is, I have been sucked into the world of like documentaries and docudramas. Like for
ooh,
me,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
in this period, Aneke, it's kind of wild. Mm-hmm. If it didn't really happen, I don't want to see it. Like
I've
I like.
Been there. I've totally
okay,
fallen down
right?
a documentary hole. And then I'll be like, I feel like something light and I'll just watch like a fun documentary. Oh, I feel like something dark. I'll watch like a dark documentary. Oh, I want something like, goofy. And then it's a comedy documentary. Mm-hmm.
You get into that period where you're just hungry for information. Like I was trying to watch, I think I was like, I wasn't feeling well. I was like, oh, I'll try to watch Daredevil. I'm like, no, this didn't really happen.
Oh,
I didn't know shit that happened. And also, you know what the mm-hmm. a side tangent for the documentaries are?
Uh-huh.
The docudramas, which
oh,
HBO
yeah, yeah.
has tons of them, where it's all
yes.
based on real life events. And you're so, you kind of get the
I
feel that you're like.
I probably watched
them all. Oh yeah, so I had a Sunday marathon.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the one about Recount, the recounting
yep.
thing that
mm-hmm.
happened on HBO. Shit, what was the other
there's one where were you mostly watching political docudramas?
Yes, they were all
okay.
political docudramas.
Oh, see,
so,
I'm avoiding that.
It was, oh yeah, it was all the political ones, and then I watched Recount. No, mm-hmm. not Recount. I just said
you
that.
You just said that.
then I watched Game Change. The Sarah Palin one, which was fucking.
Yuck.
Fascinating.
Okay.
So fucking fascinating. Because it's written by the woman, it's written by the book of the woman who was her camp, who was writing all of her speeches.
Mm.
And it's like a peek behind the, oh, everyone was like, this is fucked up. Like, it's a real peek behind the curtain of like, this woman was insane. Like,
oh, interesting.
It is so fascinating. Julianne Moore plays her.
Mm.
Really good.
Oh, when you say docudrama, I got confused. I thought you meant like a drama based like documentary. You're meaning like a performance. Thing
yes.
of what
like
actually happened.
Kerry Washington in Confirmation.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not a fan of that. I don't know why.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I live for it. Because you can see these celebrities playing these parts and stuff. And it gives me that storytelling aspect of it. But then It's like at least based on truth. So I feel like I'm like learning.
So are you into the new movie coming out that's coming out soon? Kristen Bale is playing Dick Cheney.
Yep. I'm here for it. I love those. Like I watched everyone when What's-His-Face did, Oliver Stone did W. Mm-hmm. I love going. Because I feel like they're able to let me. If a really good one will show you a little bit of humanity of the person, but then also like stoke my fires of just like, yep, that person was crazy. And now I know why they're crazy because now I have the facts from the people who are behind the curtain to tell me the facts.
Interesting. Yeah. HBO fucking loves themselves a docudrama.
As soon as like it's over and done, they're just, as soon as the event happened, they're like, quick,
they're like, let's get the celebrity.
Get me into there. Oh, they did one about Too Big to Fail. And it was so funny watching these, all of them, like when the recession was happening, you kind of just get like a peek behind like all the different and like, oh, the different characters that like play into it or whatnot. Yeah. Like you just sort of, you're learning about all these different things that are happening. So I highly recommend.
You know what I can't wait for?
What?
I cannot wait for like, you know, all of this crazy banana shit to end. And then we end up in like a nice time period where it's not insane anymore. We got like some like sane political leaders. We're being peaceful with the world again. We're working on environment stuff. And then the docudrama for this bananas bullshit that's this year comes out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
they can't make it yet
because
we're still in it.
Looking forward to.
But a long story, a huge tangent.
What were we even tangenting off to? I don't even think we got there.
We didn't. We never got there.
You just said tangent, and then we went. Oh. Doesn't that count as a topic then?
Oh, it is. You're right. Ding, it's a topic. Oh, I was a tangent from my tangent because, I was watching there's a Netflix documentary called The 90s that CNN did. So good.
So CNN has done all the decades.
They did the 90s. I know they did the 80s. I'm going to go back and watch that one too.
They did the 60s, the 70s.
Oh,
yeah.
I just went right into my favorite decade.
Oh, 90s is your favorite decade?
Oh, hands down.
Wow. I am learning.
What?
Stuff.
Why would I? What is not to love about the 90s? Television was wonderful and delightful. I mean, there's a lot of things, but like, I think like anybody who looks back on their childhood, I mean, most of us, I think that's why people are always like, oh, the good old days, because you were a kid. And like, I still knew of the certain things that were happening, like the O.J. Simpson trial and the Rodney King, riots and stuff like that. But the documentary is really fascinating. They hit all the right points. And it's so funny, especially the one about the 90s. It's like everything that is happening now has already either happened before in the 90s, or you can see the road, like the breadcrumbs of how all these different things, how they are now occurring and happening. Sarah Palin is the reason why we have Trump, I think, is Sarah Palin kind of opened the door for that. Like the next person who's going to run for the Democrats has to be someone that like, it's the world of reality TV, baby. It has to be someone that is incredibly just like charismatic and interesting. Otherwise, like people aren't going to vote for him.
You actually bring up an interesting point that I kind of stumbled onto today. And it's not about the 90s. It's about my favorite decade, which is
the 70s. Oh.
Why would it be the 70s?
I did not even exist
in the 70s.
I don't know.
If we're talking about time periods that we are alive in, I was not around.
I could just really see you loving disco.
I mean, I love the culture of the 70s, but the politics of the 70s was
bullshit. And that's what I was thinking. I just was imagining you, my little disco queen. There's a photo of us that looks very 70s.
I mean, yeah, that was our old cover for this podcast. But without getting derailed, I was thinking about this. So there's a TV show. For some reason, got into a tangent at work talking to some coworkers about
you in a tangent.
You know it? Who would have thought? Pickup artists. That whole genre.
Oh, that TV show.
Yeah. Do you remember the pickup artists on MTV? So we were talking about it, and basically that opened the door for the men's rights movement.
Ew.
Yeah, men's rights activists, because it's all about like negging and like using women as like an object to get to them. Mm. And then it opened up the whole idea for like the red pill, blue pill kind of thing. And like, it was interesting to watch. I suggest if you want to, it's spooky time, right? Spooky October.
Yeah. Ooh, spooktacular viewing.
Watch the super trailer for season 2 of The Pickup Artist, and you will be like,
Oh, that's how we got here.
That you're like, oh, is now the roadmap to the MRAs. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Because it's like all of these dorky asses that can't get dates and they're blaming it on women, and women are like objects. And it's like, it's really fascinating.
Which then takes us to like Gamergate, which again, Gamergate, we've talked about. And there's theories of Gamergate helped also Trump getting elected and this whole entire weird ass terrifying movement that we're in with these people who are terrified. Fight of equality.
It's just straight up like the we just, you know, you gotta go back to 2020's hindsight, man. You go back and see how you get to this point. It's crazy.
Yeah. Right.
Well, we took a nice little detour into Obama land, but you know.
Yeah, I know. But even like the 90s documentary made me see that like us getting involved in the war in Iraq was just Bush Jr. trying to finish what his dad had started. Just like little things of like very fast. Oh, but here's the thing I was going to talk about a week ago.
Uh-huh.
A week going back to the tangent of all the Queen tangents.
Okay.
Of a week ago, I got a little message in my interwebs that Iron Fist had been canceled. And
who
I was like,
who cares?
Yay! And then exactly a week later, I found out that Luke Cage had been canceled.
Why? I thought Luke Cage is popular. Is it not popular?
Yeah. Well, no one, here's the thing. No one knows the numbers of Netflix. Like, no one knows what, like, they have it very tight sealed on, like, what their viewership is. Like, no one knows any of the information. I have a theory that I think it's because, well, apparently it was, like, they couldn't reach contract, like, it was a contractual thing in direction where they thought season three was going to go between Netflix and the showrunner of Luke Cage. Mm-hmm. So there was a dispute over that. I feel like it's not the end of Luke Cage. I think that it's going to be revived on Disney's going to be launching their own platform similar to like what DC just did.
Oh, that is right.
And the fact that both Iron Fist, because if you just take Iron Fist away, Iron Fist and Luke Cage, their storylines cross over so much. I guess also Luke Cage and Jessica Jones too, because they do have a baby. But Luke Cage and Iron Fist
they
form
have a baby?
Oh yeah, in the comics they have a baby.
Oh, in the comics, not in the show.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But they have Heroes for Hire, Luke Cage and Iron Fist. So I was always my thought that they were going to come back when Iron Fist got canceled. And Luke Cage got canceled. I assume maybe they're going to do Heroes for Hire somewhere.
Oh, okay. Because Iron Fist obviously was not liked by people.
No,
so that
but
made sense.
His supporting cast was amazing. Colleen Wing, who she and Misty Knight have an amazing episodes together. Where in the comics, they formed Daughters of Dragons. I was hoping that was going to be a spinoff, too.
I don't know. So, I have not been following up on the Netflix Marvel shows.
I have been fading out of it as well. And I won't say why.
Oh. That's dramatic. Dramatic drop off with that.
Well, I just, you know, my involvements with Marvel have kind of dwindled over the past like year.
Yeah, I know.
And it just kind of, if it's not real, I don't want to see it. That's
yeah,
where
that's
I can.
True. I mean, yeah, we'll go right there with that. But I just kind of, from a non, I guess, personal reason, since I'm not involved with Marvel, I just kind of felt like the shows weren't as engaging as they used to be for me for some reason. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Like I want to watch Jessica Jones the second season. I didn't watch it. I definitely was not interested in Iron Fist. And I should have watched Luke Cage. I just, you know, I kind of dropped off of it. Netflix has been having some good programming lately. So
you just had other things on your queue. I will say the second season of Luke Cage does pick up for me. Like the second half, it's really dope. And Alfrey Woodard steps into like full villainous Mariah Dillard, and it's pretty fucking amazing.
I mean, she's a national treasure.
She is. Treasure her. You know who? Last thing I want to say about the 90s, it just popped into my head. I didn't realize this, but again, everything old is new again.
Okay.
So you know how everyone's like, Mark Zuckerberg is trying to take over the world. He's scary. That's the same way everybody felt about Bill Gates back in the 90s, that Microsoft was this giant monopoly.
He's a billionaire.
But like, it's because, but now like you hear about like, oh, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Yeah, which
and
is
they're
nice.
Doing all this sweet and wonderful stuff. But like, he was going up to like, being called up to Congress, like the same way that Mark Zuckerberg was.
Interesting.
Like, oh my God. Yeah, definitely recommend that 90s documentary because you're like, oh, this seems familiar and this is not what I remembered. Going back.
I don't think I was really paying much attention in the 90s, to be completely honest. I was very young and I think Yeah, like most of my knowledge of 90s are things like Skip It and music videos.
Yeah, well, that's why it's so fun to go back and watch the series. It does a really good job of talking about pop culture, the movies, the political scandals, because there's things that you maybe went over your head, and then there's things that like are like, oh, yeah, I do kind of remember that. And it just gives like a deeper undertone of the 90s, and both an appreciation and also just like a side eye as well. Of like, ooh, that's what we did. Mm. And also just like that's where why we are here now is like a first of retalking about things about like gender and race and sexuality that we hadn't been talking about for like the last few decades, especially in the 80s.
Mm, right. Yeah. On. Thing to check out. Meanwhile, I'm just watching a bunch of cooking shows. Which,
cooking up, girl.
I'm not cooking. That's why I like it, because it's mellow to watch somebody else cook. It's nice and relaxing.
Well, what happens when I come over for the holidays?
You have to get your own food. I don't know. Go to your mom's house.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we solved that. Well, Aneke, I think we have a double. We have a 1-2 punch today. We're going to be talking about the memo and fighting this administration. So I'm going to kick it off first in my corner.
I'm ready to jump in and hear what you have to say.
Hi, everybody. My name is Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
And together, we're the hosts of Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. What does that mean for you, the podcast consumer? Well, it means that you're going to get a lot of stories about how we used to do weird stuff to people in order to try to fix them.
Do you know that we used to think diseases were caused by bad smells? And that we used to eat mummies for medicine?
That's super funny. I kind of like it.
Well, thanks, and we hope you'll kind of like our show, Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. It's available every Friday wherever fine podcasts are sold, or at its beautiful, picturesque home at
MaximumFun.org.
Okay, here we are. It's gonna get, it's serious time now.
Yeah, no song.
I got, nope. no song for this. It's just a statement. NPR like.
Yes.
So over the weekend, the Department of Health and Human Services is essentially spearheading a legal definition of transgender.
Which is why?
Wait, you know what? I was going to bring up this point later, but Aneke, I just want to do it now. No, it's fine.
Jumped to the gun.
Because I'm just like, the whole entire thing, I'm just like, but I just watched, again, one of those documentaries. Vox also has a series of documentaries to plug on Netflix. They're like 20
you
minutes long.
What is happening? You're like Pac-Man for information right now.
But they did this one about I am a naked. That is the best way
you know
to describe
it's good.
Me.
I'm into
hungry
it.
For knowledge. It's addicting. Like it's so addicting. I'm addicted
There's
to documentaries.
There's nothing wrong with this addiction.
Okay, I'm addicted to documentaries. They talks about, I mean, we're gonna run out of water essentially like in the year 2040, like running out of like sustainable drinking water that like
that UN documentary totally like Jesus.
Yeah. So it's like there are other things that we should be talking about, but this is where you want to put our tax dollars at work, that you're running around sending these memos, having meetings and conversations about how to word this and when to do this. This is what you're doing, really? So
like that, oh God.
So the memo was uncovered by the New York Times.
Who is doing some bang up work right now? We have to give them credit.
I'm gonna give you credit. You know, sometimes you make me nervous, and sometimes you're on point. So
yeah, they uncovered how Trump is a fraud, and nobody seems to really paying attention to that article.
Oh, well, I want to circle back to that. I mean, I knew from one of the documentaries I was watching, but I'd like to hear from this article. So the Trump administration, you know, I heard that in a documentary.
What do you have to say, article?
It's like a vision. It's like a documentary, but with words.
I can't handle you. Okay.
So the Trump administration is considering narrowly defining gender as biological, immutable condition determined by genitalia at birth. So essentially, it's reversing what the Obama administration had created a loose definition under Title IX to... let me backtrack this. The Obama administration had loosely defined gender underneath the Title IX of Education Amendments of 1972, yeah. Which was a law that was banning sex discrimination in schools that receive federal funding.
Yeah, I remember when this happened with the Obama administration.
Yeah, and I think we've even talked about Title IX on this podcast. I think you've done a segment about it.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, it's again, the Trump administration is just working handedly to dismantle everything that Obama did. I believe it has to do with his vendetta against Obama, that he's been out for blood.
Like you said, with the water thing, like this earth is going to run out of resources and we care about how people define themselves.
I know.
Like, what is happening? Like, what?
And it's also like the role, and it's so wild to me because it's like the role of government. And it's so like the one, I think, appealing factor that a Republican Party would have is that they believe in small government and that the government shouldn't be dictating on the larger sense of all these different things. It's like, but this is the opposite of small government. This is large government.
This is full dictatorship over people's
right.
Being.
So it's like, if you're a Republican, you should be up in arms because this is against the basis of what being a Republican is about, which is about smaller government.
But it's also, you know, going against what is their thought practice. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you would notice that the smaller government faction idea comes up when liberals and Democrats are in office, but
yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? Or when it's like affecting like their taxes or something, but it's like, and it's a slippery slope. Like when you have government anyways, the role of government isn't to dictate, you know, who should be doing what. Like as long the role of government is create a safe space for people to be able to live. That's it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so
dictate where our taxes go.
Yeah, and spend it wisely, not on this war machine, but I digress. So the memo went out to the big four, the Department of Education, Justice, Health, and Human Services, and Labor, which is like, fuck, that's like, if this memo goes out to those four, I mean, you essentially have no resources for you, you know?
Right.
And so, again, the definition would define sex as either male or female, unchangeable, and determined by the genitals that a person is born with according to a draft by the Times that they found out.
Which is flawed in itself, because what about intersex people?
Yeah, yeah. I know. Well, and then any dispute about one's sex would have to be clarified using genetic testing. Get out of here. This is too intrusive, invasive, and like,
spending
time, money, effort, energy, and resources.
The
new definition would essentially eradicate federal recognition for about 1.4 million Americans who have opted to recognize themselves surgically or otherwise as gender other than the one that they were born into. And so if 1.4 million Americans, like, why are you going out to 1.4 million Americans, right? Like, how are you attacking your own people and your own constituents? I believe, like, again, this is why everyone should be up in arms and alarming about this, because anytime you are looking to take away the rights of any American, it starts with one. It goes back to that one poem, and then they came for me. And so it's like, if we allow them to take the rights of one group of people, it makes it easier for them to, then there's precedence for taking the rights of one group of people, and then you can start taking away from other groups of people. That's what this is about.
No one is fucking safe.
Yeah, and that's, you know what you say, like, why are they going after this? It's because of that, Aneke. It's a larger plan to take the rights away as many Americans they possibly can. Then they'll probably make it so they're not going to be able to vote, and then they'll be able to be arrested and put into jail, and then they can go after other groups because there's precedence over it. So we all have to stand up to this.
They are targeting like the populations that are the most vulnerable.
Yes.
So which is, and you know, the fact that Trump just came out at a rally and called himself a nationalist. Like, this is like, how are people? I mean, World War II was not that long ago.
Nope. No.
How are we forgetting this? And it's like paint by numbers.
Yes, it's a thing. It's literally, we've seen this before. We know exactly where this goes.
Mm-hmm.
And just a reminder for the LGBT fan bam out there of what the Trump administration has done to hurt us, specifically folks, our trans brothers and sisters. Trump administration has sought to bar transgender people from serving in the military, legally challenge civil rights protections for trans folks embedded in the nation's healthcare law. Several agencies have withdrawn Obama-era policies that recognize gender identity in schools, prisons, and homeless shelters.
Terrible.
The administration has even tried to remove questions about gender identity from a 2020 census. And recession by the Education of Justice Department of Obama-era guidelines that protected transgender students who wanted to use bathrooms that corresponded to their gender identity. And also the, I think it's the Department of, is the Department of Justice, Department of Education no longer even receives complaints about discrimination for transgender students. They're not even receiving them.
They're not even, God. Oh, don't even forget that the Trump administration just took away, didn't they say they're not allowing same-sex partners of
for the ambassadors? Ambassadors, correct. Yep. Also, they've stacked the courts with anti-equality judges, gutted protections for trans kids in schools, which I mentioned. It was made nice with foreign regimes that persecute queer people, including Russia, which I'm like, keep an eye on the prize here, people. The biggest threat of all. Signed an executive order empowering his administration to create a license to discriminate in agencies across the federal government.
This is a hateful fucking administration.
Yeah. And then at the head of this, who's leading the charge of this memo specifically, is Roger Servino.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Director of Office for Civil Rights, which is hilarious.
What?
Yeah. So,
wait, he's the director
of
Office for Civil Rights.
Because his main thing is he's been fighting for civil rights, but from like a religious freedom point of view. And he was also the head of the DeVos Center, and that's right, Betsy DeVos Center
Gross,
for Religion and Civil Society.
Connected.
I know, that's the thing. That's why I wanted to read this. And so, the DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation, which is a very, 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 very hateful organization. And so, yeah,
why
so he's
so much energy just to be so hateful. That takes a lot of energy to be awful to other people.
I mean, he has he believes in ex-gay therapy. He in 2007 co-authored a friend of the court brief supporting California's ban on same-sex marriage when Proposition 8 was going down. So that's this man, this very, very hateful man. So he's essentially looking to present a full proposal to the Department of Justice, which, well, that's not helpful, because who leads that? The Keebler elf himself, Jeff Sessions, who in 2017 sent to a memo, his own memo to agencies clarifying that the civil rights law that prohibits job discrimination does not cover gender identity per se. So that's what we're going up against. But what can we do? God. And I think both of us are going to be talking about there's so many things that we can do. And so I'm going to kick off a few ideas. And then I know you've got some as well, too. So definitely educating yourself, doing more than just tweeting and resharing. And this is also too of, you know, I look at this. I'm going to put this in the show notes, but there's an ally guide that Trans Equality put out. And you know, certain things of like, you know, if you don't know someone's pronouns, don't just assume, ask.
Right.
Thing I've also started doing is, like, especially if you're leading a meeting, starting it off by saying your gender pronouns, especially if it's like a new group meeting. And I think the more that especially us cisgender people do it, the more that we normalize it. I put my gender pronouns in my email signature as well. So just the more that we make it a thing that everyone does.
Yeah, I think I said that a while ago, that I've been putting it in my social media, you know,
it's,
you know, just as long, you know, you put it in as an ally and it normalizes it.
Also, a part of educating yourself too, I picked up off the sheet again. I'll post it. There's tons of them that they were saying of ways to educate yourself, but avoid compliments or advice based on stereotypes of how men and women are supposed to look. Speak out and support. You know, think about also how you use gender. Rethinking gender on documents, especially at work. I think you know, a lot of us are involved in, you know, work type situations, and I think we can really work to redefine this at our places of work. And it shouldn't, I don't think it needs to necessarily be left up to our trans folk in America to lead the charge on this. And also for me was a big one of rethinking, like, I say folks a lot, and I picked this up when I was at the PIDA conference, because it's such a colloquialism to say you guys, and and it's just an adjustment, and sometimes just like reworking like how we use gender in our basic lexicon and restructuring ourselves for that. Also in your work, if your work doesn't do it already, invite them to do some sort of training around these topics.
Definitely. I think that's necessary so more people can be informed.
Promote helpful resources and trans-led organizations from the Audre Lorde Project, La Casa, Ruby Familia, Trans Queer Liberation Movement, Fierce, which is an organization here in New York that my National Queer Theater is looking to partner with and building, doing some theater. There's the Sylvia Rivera Law Project. Again, I'll link all of these, but there's tons sharing. Sharing out helpful numbers for resources for folks in the trans community as well. Also, number three, share the work of trans activists and journalists. So things like, you know, Lambda Legal, ACLU, and Transgender Law Center are legal organizations that offer extensive information about trans rights and policies and how they affect them. So also keeping like liking these pages, following them on social media so you can also reshare their information out there. Promoting trans voices that are often silenced. Like following people like Janet Mock or Laverne Cox, Tyler Ford, Amaya Scott, Meredith Talusan. They're great people to follow and so that way you're going to be educating yourself about what they're saying and then also getting those voices out there too. Voting, obviously, getting out there and getting that vote. There's more than 400 LGBT folks running around the country, part of the Rainbow Wave, getting out there. There are 23 seats.
My God, vote.
Yeah, and there are 23 seats in the House that are up for grabs that we need to flip over to blue. And the LGBTQ Victory Fund has endorsed seven of these leading challengers in an election. And apparently, one third of the total needed for Democrats to take the majority are LGBTQ, and that would then double the amount in the LGBT caucus. So we would, in this one election cycle, double the amount of LGBT people in the House, which is pretty awesome and fantastic. Many of which I've named in our last episode. One I did not was Chris Pappas in New Hampshire, who's hoping to become his state's first openly gay member of Congress. So you got him.
Yes.
Also with voting, make sure to check out all the candidates. Do some research. Take like 10 to 20 minutes this week to research different candidates and causes and measures and all that sort of stuff so you know. And that way you can be an evangelist for these people. You can follow them on social media. Talk about them. Get people to know about them. Share. Emily's
Retweet.
List. Yeah, exactly. Emily's List is a great resource for finding out candidates. Runforsomething.org, which I've mentioned before. Also check and see early voting. See if you're area does early voting. You can make it a brunch thing with your friends and go out for some early voting or something. And like the idea is just to get people energized and excited about it. Yes, on one end, it's like, ooh, this is kind of a scary time, but it's also an exciting, energizing time.
We can change it.
And we get to participate in democracy, which is such a freedom that like not everybody has and not everybody has had in this country. Just wrapping up here, I'm going to share this. There's this woman named Liz Campbell. She created a Google Doc of 33 things that you can do. And it's a really cool doc. I got on her email list. She was doing like 7 days of action that you can do. And, you know, also just thinking too, you know, again, across the board, LGBTQ people can still be fired, denied housing, or be turned away from stores, restaurants, and other public accommodations in roughly 30 states. So, I mean, there's so many people who I think like stopped running the race when gay marriage was passed. And talking about folks within the community, like you stopped. We can't. We have to continue fighting. And there's all kinds of things. There's an app called Crush the Midterms app, which is apps are fun, right? Like, how can I get involved? Got your attention. Right. Samantha Bee has an app. There's also phone banking and text banking. Like, you can text bank, which is simple. You don't have to talk to anybody. You can text it out.
Phone banking can be kind of daunting.
Sure. And you can text banking, you can make it a party. And so there's, you know, you and your friends get together and you can, you know, text out. And it has helped. Like, it is, sometimes I get it. It's annoying to get those texts. But I know that I've, when I got into that voting booth and I was like, who the fuck am I supposed to vote for? And I looked and I got that text and I was like, oh yeah, that's right. That person. It does work. And they say the last 4 days before an election are the most important. And there is a app called the Last Weekend app. And it shows different ways. And the lastweekend.org, you can enter in your zip code and be directly connected with ways to get involved in those last 4 days. And then if you're in New York, there's the Knock for Nine, which is an amazing initiative that's making canvassing for swing districts for the last few weekends before elections easy. So all different kinds of easy ways for us to get involved. And we have to, because we see what's at stake. And, you know, again, I've said this before, but Michael Moore doesn't even think that we'll have a 2020 election at the weight that we're at. Like, like you said, the paint by numbers are there of how remember you and I asked like a long time ago of like, how does dictatorship happen? Well, we're seeing it.
Well, we're in that, the water is starting to boil.
The water is starting to boil. You're so right. And I want to end on a funny note.
Okay.
So Brian Kemp, who is an anti-gay gubernatorial candidate in Georgia, he's running against our very own lovely Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams.
Abrams, who, donated if elected, to her cause.
Who, if elected, would become the nation's first female African-American governor. Well,
love it.
Brian Kemp needs to recheck he's advertising for votes, because...
Oh, where did he advertise?
Grindr.
What an idiot! What the fuck?
Yeah, apparently he was going out there. I guess what happened was they just pay like an advertising agency and it just goes out to different like apps or whatnot. But people were like, why is this on my Grindr? And he's like, hella anti-gay. So I thought that was really funny. So
that
and you know what?
Funny.
I'm glad, because that's just wasted money. Wasted ass money. And if you were on Grindr and you saw that, don't vote for him.
It should
don't
be a reminder to vote for Stacey Abrams.
That's what it should be. That's what it should be, exactly. Well, Aneke, I'm going to pass the ball over to you to see if we can make a basket.
Yeah, I am ready to take that baton, whatever sports reference we could do.
Let's kick it up with
some
heels.
More tips. Yeah, more feel-good tips and also some books for us to look towards in fighting this memo. All right, I'm here.
She caught it. She got the baton, the ball.
And you did.
The basket.
I got it. It's in my hands now. I'm dribbling it. And you did such a beautiful job setting up everything that we're fighting against, what the memo is, why the Trump administration are fascist, how we're heading into, you know, a fucking dictatorship, and how their assault on trans people is an indication of, you know, just taking away our civil liberties, basically. And this memo, which is like threatening the erasure of a whole fucking population of people, is something that we need to fight against. So I was reading Color Lines, one of my favorite blogs that I like to dabble in, and I came across an article written by Key Jackson and Malcolm Shanks, and it is titled Practical POC Tips for Fighting the Trump Administration's Latest Assault on Trans People.
Tips.
This one is basically focusing around POC trans people.
I love that you pointed out, I mean, because they're the most at risk. I don't have the statistics offhand because I haven't watched a documentary about it recently, but
there.
Okay. I'm getting to that documentary. It's only so many I can watch in a day.
I know. Oh, I watched a really good documentary on Marsha P. Johnson. Netflix.
She threw the first heel.
Yeah, you got to watch it. It's fascinating because it kind of talks about what life was like to be gender nonconforming in the 70s and 80s and what life was like for her, which was fascinating. So definitely check that out.
I've been watching
documentaries too.
See, look at us, the docu twins.
I'd be watching.
What's a docu song? Sorry, tangent. Is there a docu song? Is that just a song?
I don't know. So put a pin in that. On the first tip for practical POC tips for fighting against this memo, is resist white streaming. So I'm just going to read what they have to say.
Ooh,
so basically
what is
they
that?
Say transgender and gender nonconforming people of color remain the most impacted by harmful anti-transgender policies. So should be at the forefront of policy and strategy conversations. Avoid internalizing or promoting narratives that attempt to center whiteness and remove the experience of people of color from the conversation. So basically that's stating we need to resist being colorblind about this issue. We need to be upfront and honest that people of color that are transgender and gender nonconforming are our most vulnerable of that population. And there is no ifs, ands, or buts about it, you know?
Yeah.
By saying everyone who is transgender and nonconforming is all the same is whitewashing in itself.
Yeah.
So that is one aspect of really kind of sticking to fighting against this is also acknowledging the divisions within.
That's true. Yeah. Because like you said, I think the most at risk for being murdered or beaten up, being homeless, suicide, all that stuff.
Ugh, it's awful. So the more that we talk about that, the more that those issues come to light and we are fighting against this erasure. All right. So next one is say no to politicals defining our lives as wedge issues. So they write, we've seen some commentators say that this is strategically is losing issue for Democrats or a wedge issue that will harm those who touch transgender rights in the upcoming midterm election. We should be wary of narratives that talk about our community like chess pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Transgender rights are not a wedge. Transphobia is an already existing wedge in our movement that the Trump administration know to exploit. Now, I love this because this is something that I think is the division between moderate Democrats and progressive Democrats, where moderate Democrats really want to kind of emphasize the point for, we have to walk the line. We have to make sure we can, you know, convince other people to, you know, all these swing states and, oh, we can't touch this issue because it's going to alienate others. We need to not be in that mindset at this point. We need to go full hog into supporting all people that, that need support and not play this as a game because it's gotten to the point where people's lives are in danger, our democracy is in danger, the whole structure of our country is in danger. So we need to swing heavy and we need to swing hard with our policies and our fights for human rights. So
yeah, agreed. Well, I mean, even if you look at the history of it, it's not like the majority of the country released the slaves, the majority of the country did not give the right to vote to black people. It was we had leaders who stood up and stood up for the right thing. Like we can't wait around for the majority of people to come around because that's not how minority issues end up working because they're the minority, you know?
Exactly.
We need leaders, and you're right, and like championing leaders that are going to stand up for the right thing and putting our money, time, and energy behind them.
And not votes, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so another list on here is remind folks that we're a part of a well-established international movement. Now, I really like this. So it says we should demand frames that include an international and historical understanding from all media outlets. The phrase racial gender ideology used by the Heritage Foundation is a dog whistle to an international coalition of far-right groups who have been working in places like Poland, Brazil, Uganda, and Mexico to roll back laws that guarantee safe and affordable access to abortion, transgender right laws, and other laws that protect LGBTQ people, women, and working class people. So this is international.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that where in Brexit.
Yep.
You can see that, like, right now I watched a thing on John Oliver that in Brazil there is the election where it's like a Trump-like figure. So all of these different things are bubbling up all over the world, like you said before with Russia, that's very anti-LGBTQ.
That's where they're getting a lot of their money from, those oligarchs.
So we need to acknowledge the fact that this isn't just an American, a USA problem. This is across the world, and we need to protect all of our global citizens and protect their rights and understand that a lot of LGBTQ immigrants are coming to United States because they are fleeing places that are more advanced than we are in their hate and their discrimination. So,
and that just kills me because that's what we're supposed to be is, I mean, putting slavery aside, once the Statue of Liberty went up and at our feet, it says there's that poem and it's like, give me, you're tired, you're weak, you're poor. Like, we're supposed to be this home of people who are refugees and, you know, to flee oppressive places. And that's what America is supposed to be at this point.
Exactly. Amen. The last part says, remember, we are still fine AF. And by saying that is like what you were saying before, fine transgender activists and gender nonconforming activists on Twitter, on social media, in their writings, in their books, share, retweet, post on Facebook, post on Instagram, really embrace the creativity and activism and language and verbiage and images that are produced by, you know, people of the community, and that will help spread awareness. So I'm going to do a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. I found a list on the Paris Review.
Oh, hey, fancy.
Which is real fancy.
Yeah. Ooh, wee wee.
I know. It's written, it's called Towards Creating a Trans Literary Canon by R.L. Goldberg. And it basically talks about, the article talks about how R.L. Goldberg is not necessarily creating a canon per se, because this is a very academic Paris Review.
Right,
it's more of a selection of text by people who are either gender nonconforming or trans or just a part of the LGBTQ community, and how they have you know, basically meant a great deal to R.L. Goldberg. And there's a lot of people of color on here as well. So I wanted to just name a couple of these books so you can get into reading yourself, you know?
Ooh, oh, me too. Well, okay. You know, I'm into documentaries, but I'll put them down. I need to give my eyes a rest and look at some words.
Yeah, there you go.
Some docu words.
You know, book pages rest the eye a lot. They suggest that you read before you go to bed instead of looking at screens. It's just gentler for your eyes. Okay, so the first one that I want to bring up is called Sympathetic Little Monster, and it's by Cameron Awkward Rich. Okay, and it goes, Awkward Rich's poems are about haunting, being haunted, and what Jacques Derrida would call hauntology. His poems are about moving through space, or our tragic immobility in space and the waiting that happens before movement begins and again after it ends. His poems are haunted by self. We were and might yet be the self that lives in us, nested and transient even through our alliterations. So this is some deep, heavy shit. Here's a little excerpt. So this is one of his poems. Get it? Gender is a country, a field of signifying roses you can walk through or wear tucked behind your ear. Eventually the flower wilts and you can pick another, or burn the field, or turn and run back towards the track.
Deep,
damn. Right?
Yeah.
So that is Sympathetic Little Monster by Cameron Awkward Rich, who is a POC.
Yeah.
Black.
Hey, yo. Okay.
Next one on the list is called Anybody by Ari Banias. Okay. Sexy, kaleidoscopic, askew, certainly not straight. Benia's poems invoke multiplicities, the porousness of boundaries, and the impossibilities of hermetic boundedness. His poems are poems of encounters, real, imagined, fantasized, and feared. He assigns multiple meanings to single words, everything doubled. One poem, aversion, might just as well be aversion. Each poem shivers with lush kinesthetic anticipation, the wild potential of the instant after you've taken a great gulp of air, the instant enjoyed, felt, endured just before the jump.
Mm.
Good, right? Wow.
Yeah.
So that one is just a reminder. That's Anybody by Ari Benaez. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the next one is Exile and Pride by Eli Clare. And Claire's essays on the body, disability, queerness, transness, rurality, abuse, and home draw from attentively from feminists of color writings in the 80s and 90s. Activists and writers like Cherie Morgan, Audre Lorde, Essex Hemphill, Angela Davis, Nellie Wong, and Barbara Smith. Like theirs, Claire's writing vigilantly considers the multiplying entanglements of white supremacy, capitalism, imperialism, and ableism. Pretty cool. So that one is Exile and Pride by Eli Clare.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm going to skip ahead to this one, which is called Stone Butch Blues by Leslie Feinberg. So Feinberg once wrote in her novel. So it's spelled H-I-R novel. So I just want to give credit to that because it comes out differently when I say it.
Right.
With this novel, I planted a flag. Here I am. Does anyone else want to discuss these important issues? I wrote it not as an expression of individual high art, but as a working class organizer, mimeograph, a leaflet, a call to action. Feinberg's novel tracks Jess Goldberg, a young butch coming into her own in Buffalo in the 50s. Despite finding solidarity with other working class butches, Jess and the members of her queer community face the unremitted presence of police brutality, chronic unemployment, and poverty. Taking hormones and passing as male is one way that Jess attempts to navigate unbearable conditions, though doing so is not without a loss, specifically the loss of her female identity and community. As ever, Feinberg's work is a reminder that the arc of history doesn't always bend towards justice. Invoking Frederick Douglass, Feinberg underscores the truth of collective action. Without struggle, there is no progress. And wow. Just a reminder, that is Stone Butch Blues by Leslie Feinberg.
Wow.
I know. These are like some deep books and I love it. I want all of us to just really challenge ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'll do one more. Let's do Jody Rosenberg, Confession of the Fox, which is a novel. I wanted to make sure that I got all the different genres in there.
Oh, yeah. I feel so like well-rounded at this, like, Aneke's library. There's so many options.
You know, I'm curating it for you guys. And I'll have the list. We'll link the list in the show notes if you want to. There's plenty of other books on here for you to explore as well. Okay, so this one, Rosenberg's novel, one of the first books by a trans author to be published by a major publishing house, reimagines Jack Shepherd's notorious English jailbreaker of the early 18th century as a trans man. The novel is narrated by a trans academic who discovered unverified memoirs, perhaps written by Shepherd himself, and who must simultaneously protect the memoirs from the corporate university's imminent gutting maw and determine their veracity. Rosenberg draws equally on contemporary critical theory, historical archives, and a remarkably impossible narrative to ask. What is an impossible subject? What is an impossible body? What conditions of community, communion, solidarity, and struggle allow the impossible to come into focus, if only for a moment, if only to escape to somewhere else? And that is Confessions of the Fox by Jody Rosenberg.
Wow.
I know, Paris Review is stepping it up.
This is not your grandmother's Paris Review, that's for sure.
I know. Actually, I want to do one more, if that's
do
okay.
Do it.
Okay. So this one, I feel like, very much relates to what we've been talking about. So this one's called Even This Page Is White by Vivek Sharaya. Mm-hmm. So the poem Eraser takes the form of a school lesson, a punishment repeated across the space of a chalkboard, six phrases repeated in neat rows of five. I will not make this about race. I will not bring my race to school. I will not make believe. I will not share my race online. I will not bring my race to work. Race is a choice, not a construct. The book is characterized by so much empty white space. The poems tend to be slim, justified away from the book's spine, barely filling half the page. And yet, in the poem about erasure, there is so little room to breathe, and that's the point. Soraya's poems, in their direct, critical stare, turn back the telescope on the white gaze. But within the expansive whiteness of the page, Soraya offers stunning images, ambivalence, aching, and pleasure.
I even love how like these reviews are so poetic in themselves too.
I know.
It's Paris the poetry review, on man. Poetry. Yeah,
they
were like, "Who are we gonna get to write these?
I know.
We can't just get George."
I know they got R.L. Goldberg who
yeah, give me
created an art.
Damn,
writing this
reviews. Yeah, wow. Mm-hmm. So before we kick out of your corner, I just wanted to what you were talking about was reminding me of like the history of the trans community and that with LGBT people, we've talked about this before, but it's like we've been around forever. And my theater company, the National Queer Theater, we just did a play reading about this group called the Cercle Hermafroditos. And they were a transgender advocacy organization founded in 1895 here in New York City. You know, and so just like, you know, this is nothing new. And so I just want to remind folks that like you've got a history, you have a place, you've been here, we've been here. And this new work's coming up are just even more a part of that. And I feel like, you know, now that we're and that's why it's so important for folks to not have to go back into the shadows and to have protection underneath the laws, because it validates that you are here. You are part of the community. We validate you. We see you. You're a part of this. And you don't need to live in the shadows. You get to live a free life just as much as anybody else. Can
with
and should
all the respect and all the laws and all every you know it's everybody's human right to be able to live their life in freedom, and that's all we're asking. And this is all, like you said before, this is just a power, this is a grab for power, control, and dictatorship. And we're gonna fight against it.
We are. And you know what, you said to this too, like they're going for the most, we must protect the most vulnerable of our country and our community. It is our job as Americans to do that. And they're not safe, we're not safe until everyone is safe, because they're coming for you next, you know? So it's just, it's human decency. Well, Aneke, thank you for this.
Yeah, no, thank you, James. I think we did a bang up job together.
Yes, we did. We're the new banger sisters.
That feels weird, but all right.
The secret is out. I, Open Mike Eagle, officially had a wrestling match. And on the next Tyson Fights, I'm talking all about it. From the rap battles that got it started.
Open Mike, you ain't ready.
Oh, really?
You cold like some spaghetti.
And to how I hurt myself in ways I didn't know I could. That day and the day before, I got so many texts from people who really care about me who were like, please don't break your neck. The only place you can get the full story is on the newest episode of Tights and Fights. Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts.
Aneke, I forgot to tell you.
Okay, tell me.
Well, real quick, you know, I'm always saying get involved, everybody. And I can't ask you to do something if I'm not doing it myself. I got involved. I said this, mentioned it earlier quickly, the Manhattan Young Democrats. Mm. And I was expecting to go there and see a bunch of like white legacies. Mm-hmm. It was the most POC organization I've ever seen in my life.
I love it.
All of the leadership was POC, because you know what happened was it used to be a bunch of like white legacies who like their grandfather was part of the organization, their daddy's daddy was part of the organization, and the new black president got in there and he brought in a coalition of people.
Yes.
And It's so cool too, because like we have a lot of local city council members who come to our meetings and they're like, what do you guys want? And so it reminded me of like, it's one thing to be by yourself wanting to invoke change, but if you can find an organization that you in any, or there's so many organizations out there,
yeah,
and your council people look to those organizations for change. And so there's different task force. It's a different way to get involved. So you
sometimes
feel like, well, what do I do? Mm-hmm. And sometimes like joining an organization that is out there doing the good fight is a great way to go. So I highly recommend. I was at a gala for Sage, because I got involved with Sage, which is like a LGBT seniors organization. Mm-hmm. And the gala was hella fancy, Aneke. It was like something out of like, I was expecting like the Joker to come and rob us.
Oh my
like,
God. Like that's how fancy. So fancy.
I love you so much because I can say that and you know exactly what
I do. I know exactly what that means.
Fancy as fuck. And they were honoring George Takei. And my theater company, we just did a reading about a gay kid in the 1940s, mm-hmm, and sort of like Japanese culture and Japanese internment camps. Mm-hmm. And my assistant director was like, let's talk to George. And I'm like, okay, we've got from the top of the staircase to the bottom of the staircase, because they're like, everyone go to dinner now.
Yeah.
So I from the top of the staircase to the bottom of the staircase to talk to George, uh-huh, and sort of pitch him, you know, our theater company, the National Queer Theater. And I kick it off like, oh, George, we're part of the National Queer Theater. He's like, oh, that sounds like a lovely organization. I'm like,
that's nice.
Sweet. He's going to donate. Deep pockets.
Perfect.
And then I'm like, oh, we just did a show about, you know, that we thought you would have loved about the Japanese internment camps. And then he goes, Japanese American internment camps.
Oh,
and I'm
like, okay. Oh, well, you know, yeah.
And it from the top of the, I got a lecture, Aneke, from the top of the staircase all the way down to the bottom of the staircase. And that was like, and I kept trying to like move it along. Like, oh yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Also, there was like nerves. I had like just 2 minutes, like a minute to talk to him. I'm trying to go as fast as I possibly can. I got not a single other word in. It was just a lecture all the way to the bottom.
Oh my God. I mean, you know that he did a whole play on this.
Oh. Absolutely, okay. Which is why I was like, oh, sweet. George is going to want, like, that's why I talked to him about it. Because I was like, he did a play about this. He lived in one for 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, this will be great. But I will say it was interesting because I don't think at the post-show discussion it was ever phrased as a Japanese-American internment camp. And one of the guys, his dad also lived in it. Uh-huh. But a learning, it is a thing that, like, it was a learning point.
Yeah.
But I did get a photo. We still got a photo with him.
Oh, you got a photo with him? How come you didn't send me this photo?
Oh, you know, I haven't even posted it to social media yet. Yeah, I'll do that. You're right.
Just send it to me. I want to see it. Just, jeez.
Yeah,
I'm your friend too. Gosh.
Me with George. And then other last thing is I went to this gala for this LGBT homeless organization I've been volunteering at. Mm-hmm. And it was so beautiful to see. You know, I just want to say this. Sometimes if you go out there and you're volunteering, you might not know the impact that you make with other people. Mm. Because we go there and we make dinners on Sunday nights. And I try to go once a month, if not twice a month, if I can, mm-hmm, on Sunday nights. And we just go and we make our dinners and we make dinner for them. And one of the youth came up to me and he was like, you know, I just want to say that, like, it means like every time you guys come and we see you guys just being, you know, you're out and proud, fabulous selves.
Oh, yeah.
And he, you know, I come from a community where that's not possible. And it's so inspiring to see you all.
Oh,
and it's
just nice. Like your
mere presence, mm-hmm, can do wonders. So I went from one gala where I put my foot in my mouth, as I do when I meet celebrities. It's tradition.
You got to just keep it up. That's what we expect at this point.
If I meet a celebrity, I'm going to say something and they're going to be mad at me.
We expect this, James. I'm glad that you're just keeping it real, you know?
Keeping it 100, yeah. So anyways, I wanted to sneak that in before we got out of the show.
No, I love it. I think it's wonderful. And to add to that,
yes,
I got a tweet of the week on here.
Who done tweeted us? Who was using that social media?
My phone just like... Okay, here we go.
We're back.
It is from at Julie Garmez. And Julie Garmez writes, I just discovered Minority Corner podcast. Where have I been? So glad to be among friends. You know what? Welcome. And like...
Yeah, welcome.
You are among friends.
Yeah, I was going to say that same thing.
I just wanted to like take this like, you know... This tweet, even though it is complimenting us, but I want to compliment all of our listeners. Thank you for listening to Minority Corner and creating such a great community and like sharing all of this information. Like, I recently gave a talk to a class about podcasting, and it kind of occurred to me that I literally am learning along with you guys. Like, my Creating Corners every week, it's not like I personally am not pulling this from my own knowledge. I am researching things. I'm discovering new, like things that I didn't even know. And I consider myself so liberal that I'm like basically a witch. So it's like, I like, you know, and it's opening
you
up
one of
my
them woke
mind.
Witches.
Yeah, I am. And like, it's, so I really want to thank all of the listeners that are enabling me to learn and grow and laugh and play as well. So thank you.
You know, I want to CC on that. I want to co-sign and corroborate that. Is that a new thing?
I think CC so. That? Did you know that CC means carbon copy? So
well, on Minority
school.
Quarter, it means co-sign and corroborate, okay?
Why do you get to make the doctrine? This is equal parts.
Okay.
Bring that
and it also
in
means...
the meeting.
Our offline meeting, you guys. It's gonna get intense. But you know, I was thinking about the same thing. I think I was making oatmeal and I was thinking the same exact thing. I was stirring the pot and I was like, you know, think about what I was gonna talk about this week. Yeah. And I think the same thing. I know, I feel like I've learned, it's pushed me to like, I view the world differently because I'm trying to be like a sponge to get information and then disseminate that information out to our listeners and to just, you know, create that ripple effect. But it's like, there's so many things that I've learned every week. Like you said, I learn, laugh, and play right along with everybody and get shocked and get energized and get all the things right along with
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Like, if I wasn't doing this podcast, I don't know if I would be as engaged.
I think I'd be a big dum-dum. Like, what would I know? Mm-hmm. What would I, you know, there's like, it's pushed us myself to look into subjects and dig deeper and do the research into this, all the things that we talked about for 151 episodes.
Exactly.
We did get a review of the week.
Oh, we did. Okay.
Yes. 5 stars from Buckaroo 456. Important Perspectives, that's what they titled it.
Okay.
And they said, I may be a cis het white dude, but I get a lot of good points of view and information from outside my own perspective from this podcast.
Yes.
My 13-year-old daughter and I listened to this and several other...
You know what?
Several kids gotta learn, okay? I give you all the snaps here.
Hell yeah.
We listened to this and several other Max Fun podcasts in the car, and this is one of the most energetic and topical. Thank you.
Aw, thank you.
I love
that's
it.
Nice.
You know, I love that Minority Corner is a show that the whole family should watch, apparently. We are a part of it. Well, when I read that, I was like, damn, should I say cock a little less?
I mean,
no,
you know what?
I'm not going to censor myself.
I mean, they're saying
cock.
If you watch Big Mouth on Netflix, then you know that they're saying all that all over the place. So they know.
They're saying it at
the
schoolyard. Mm-hmm. So it's better for them to like hear it amongst... with everyone together and in a safe space. We say cock in a very safe manner.
I don't like to say that word. I say penis.
I love to say cock.
It is really aggressive.
I think it's fun. Look at those cocks.
It is not. It's
but
in
you
your
know
face.
The way I say it with a little Midwestern twang.
Do you?
So it softens it a little bit. Cock.
I like how you're like, I'm gonna say it less, and then you spent this whole last minute basically saying it on repeat.
Probably the name of the episode.
No, it will not. I am not naming it that. I mean, why not?
You ain't get a CC on that? You ain't get a carbon copy that? Or you ain't get a corroborate and co-sign that? CC me.
CC me.
Ooh, we were silly up until the bitter end.
I know. That was...
Well, you get... You all can get silly with us on the interchannels. What are they called?
Yeah, I like that. I mean, you can go on Twitter, which is one of the interchannels, which is Minority Corner with a K.
What other interchannels are we on?
We are on Facebook.
Facebook interchannel.
We got a Facebook page. We also got the Corner Kids Playground. You can email us. Ask us anything. We haven't gotten an ask us anything in a while.
It has been a long time. You guys don't want to know nothing?
Yeah, we're...
You guys don't need
we'll
to know?
We'll investigate. Ask Minority Corner anything. So our email is Minority Corner. Remember, corner spelled with a K @gmail.com.
Big thanks to Brownout for supplying us with all the music.
Yeah, keeping us jazzy. Thank you to Woody today, our editor, who put in
the
work.
Editing magic. You know, you guys have no idea all the gymnastics that he has to do to edit this thing.
It's a complicated sausage, y'all.
It is crazy, but thank you to Woody for making us sound as fabulous and professional.
I know, thank you.
got you fooled.
Nah, just kidding. We're sloppy jalopies.
We are. But you love us and we love you. And thank you all for listening to Minority
because
Corner.
Together, we're the majority.
Love y'all.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.